Bokeh Tov world. Today's daf in Masechet Shavuot, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Mem Zayin, and we're right up at the top of the daf. We were about to begin the list of psulim, people who cannot make the shvua, not because of a particular psul in terms of shvua, but in terms of psulim of people who are not relied upon because they're not careful about monetary issues. So, where all of these cases, somebody was a gambler and so on. Why do we need these cases? You told me already the halacha, and you gave me examples of people who cannot be nishba, and basically anybody that is not honest in the way that he is making his money is automatically considered to be someone who would be puzzled. So why do we need to mention all, we're going to mention every case? Tulamali. No, there's two different sets here. The first set was psula diaraita because they were puzzled for shvua in terms of the way they treated shavuas. And then katani psula derabanan, where the rabbanan added things that are not mamash gazan diaraita, but are nonetheless sufficient to puzzle them from a shvua. Now the next case that we had in our Mishnah was in the event that Shnehem are Chashudim, Chazra Shvua Limkoma. Very unclear language. If neither of them, so we started off with a case where Kenegdo Chashud B'Shvua, and we gave the person who would have necessarily been the one to have to accept the Shvua, we now give him the right to be a Shvua of Notli. But what happens if he is also not able to make a Shvua? Says the Mishnah, well, it goes back to its place. Now, the question is, when we say its place, what exactly do we mean by its place? So we have two different approaches, and one of them was that according to Rabbi Yossi, was that it means its place. According to Rabbi Meir, it means that they split it, right? So we talked about that, and what might it mean when it says its place? We said it could be it was Chazor Sinai to its place, and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to be the one who is going to take it out on you if you lied, but Lamaisi, you can't, neither can make the shul, we just leave it. Or whether it means it goes back to the original one who was supposed to take the shul, and since he's Einu Yochel Lishavah, so now he has to be Meshalim. Lamaisa says, Ravater of Nachman, I'm not sure how to read the Mishnah. Was it Rabbi Yossi who said that they're Chokin or Rabbi Meir who said that they're Chokin? And this is very important because in a machlokas between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Meir, the accepted psak is always like Rabbi Yossi. So we need to establish for sure what the correct gears is in the Mishnah. And Rabbi Nachman said, I really don't know myself for sure. Okay, so what are we going to do? La halacha. I'm a little Yadana. I don't know because I'm unable to define the Mishnah correctly. I can't be sure of who the halacha is like. Lemaisa Yitma Omer of Yosef Bar Minyumi Omer of Nachman. It appears that Reb Nachman in the end determined that it was Reb Yosi who said Yachloku and Chetani Rezvid Bar Oshaya that it was Reb Yosi who said Yachloku, and some say that it was Rav Zvid who found a braita in which Rav Oshaya said in that braita that Rav Yossi Omer Yachloku. Not that it was Rav Zvid Bar Oshaya, but that Rav Zvid was quoting Rav Oshaya. Okay, but the bottom line is, Omer Rav Yossi Bar Minyume, when it came to the halacha lemaisa, Rav Nachman paskin Yachloku, which means that in the end, he determined and it was Rabbi Yosef who had said Yachloku, not Rabbi Meir. Now, when you say Chazra Shvu'a Limkoma, so we learned when we learned in the Mishnah, the Machlokas of how to understand it. Now we get to the Gemara that actually analyzes what exactly does it mean. Now we're saying Rabbi Meir said that pshat, but whoever it was, what does that mean, Limkoma? Om Rabbi Ami, Rabotenu Shebebab Elamru. The Shvua goes back to Har Sinai. Chazra Shvua l'Sinai. So therefore, if we can't get a Shvua, and we can't make either of them swear, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, you know, you're not allowed to steal, and he'll take care of the guy who steals. So we warn the people that they have to be nizhar. Okay, this is the way Rashi learns. Rabotenu shebe'eretz Yisrael amru, chazra shvuah lemechuyav la. Since in this case, we cannot apply our takana, right? So we can't say, well, we're going to give the keyach to take the shvuah to the individual who was in the end had to accept the shvuah from the other one. And therefore, we're going to give it back to where it originally was. And that was the person who had to swear. If he's a beta b'mitzvah, he had to swear midiraisa. Now he can't swear. So the Torah says that you have to be lakach the shvuah, the lo yishalem. But if you can't be lokeach the shvuah, because he can't make the shvuah, then he does have to be mishalem. Omer of Papa, by the way, when we use those words, rabotenu shebabavel, you should just know that they are a reference to Rav Shmuel, as we're going to show you. And Rabotenu Sheberetz Yisrael is a reference to Rabbi Abba, as I'm going to show you. This is a great opportunity for me to bring out who we refer to with this terminology, because I have actually additional material that will show that to you. I can show you that Rabotenu Shebabavel refers to Rav Shmuel. So the ones who said that it's Chozra L'Sinai, that's Rabotenu Shebabavel, because we have a Mishnah that we had earlier, which is that Hayitomim lo yiporu ela b'shvuah. So remember we said, Yitomim themselves, they can't collect without making a shvuah. And when you say, well, what kind of shvuah could they possibly make, since they really don't know themselves what happened? So they make a shvuah that our father didn't tell us before he died, and so on. So when we say that in the Mishnah, we ask, this we're going to have in tomorrow's stuff, we ask, well, when we say they're collecting from someone, who is that someone? I mean, surely, if they're collecting from the guy that owes the father the money directly, who's alive, and either going to the Lova himself, does that make sense? Their father could have brought the same shtar, if he were alive, to the same individual, who was the same Lova, and he would have collected without a shvuah. So we're not going to be more machmir on the Yitomim, are we? If avuan shakar below shvuah, so inu b'shvuah, all of these shvuahs normally are to make things easier for yorshim that are Yitomim, not the opposite. So why wouldn't they be able to collect without a shvuah just like their father could have? They have the same contract. So what the Mishnah must be referring to is that in the same way that other people that collect from Yitomim have to make a shvuah, so too Yitomim who will collect from Yitomim, they too have to make the shvuah. Now, of course, the shvuah is different because they can only say as far as they know, but they have to say that as far as they know, that this loan was never paid and our father never told us that it was, and we never found any papers that it was, and so on. So what does that mean? That even though they cannot make a real shvuah, meaning they can't say that we know for a fact, so they're really in a position of not being able to be nishba. So there's no way that they can make an actual shvuah. So Rav and Shmuel point out, and both of them say this, that lo shana lo shemit malve b'chaye love. They can collect without a real shvuah, which is like this, to the best of our knowledge, kind of shvuah. The only time that they can do that is in a case where the lender died first, and then the borrower dies, and then the children are coming now to court. But if it was the other way around, so let's say the love, the borrower, he died first, right? And the lender was alive. Now the lender is morish to his children, the Yatomim here that are collecting from the other Yatomim. He's being morish then this shtar. Can he collect if he hadn't died? Could he have collected from the heirs, the Yatomim, in his lifetime? No. Why? Because kvar nitchayev malveh l'bnei loveh shvuah. Since the borrower had died, if he had wanted to collect from the borrower's children, he would have had to make a shvuah. What would that shvuah have been? It would have been, I know for a fact that this loan was not paid back. Can his heirs, after he dies, and now they're coming to collect with that same contract, can they make that shvua? No, because they have no idea. They can only say, as far as we know, our father never told us that this was paid. But that means that the real shvua that was already part of the collection process is never going to be made. That means that his children, the atomim that are coming to collect, are chayiv to make a shvua. That is the shvua that he would have had to make. And they cannot be nishmain, right? So now this is a classic case. I mean, in a very complex way, in a subtle way, but abstractly speaking, this is a classic case of someone who is b'chuyav shvua and cannot take the shvua. He can only say, to the best of my knowledge. I mean, that's not the shvua that needed to be made. So he can't make that. And therefore, since kfar nitchayev amalveh livnei loveh shvua, a person cannot be morish a loan that's collectible only with a shvua to his children as if he made the shvua. So he can't be morish a shvua to his children because they can't make it. So what are they going to do? So then that would mean that since they're mechuyev a shvua and they can't make that shvua, so therefore they can't collect, right? All right, now, if that's the case, so then that is exactly what we said before, that Rabotenu Shebavel said, that it was Chozar leSinai, and it cannot be collected. So who is that? Rav and Shmuel, says Rav Papa, you see? And then, let me prove to you that when we say Rabotenu Shebe'eretz Yisrael, the reference is to Rabbi Abba, because we have exactly that case. In a case that we've studied before, there was a guy, the Chotaf Nazka Michavre. So somebody walks by somebody else and grabs out of his hand a Nazka, an ingot of silver. Right? So we had this before in Lamed Beis, and he is caught, and they take it to court, and they bring him to Rabbani, and the witness says, yes, listen, I mean, we don't need a witness, sorry. The guy says, listen, this person just took this out of my hand in public. So Rav Ami is there, and Rav Abba, that's why we're going to prove it's Rav Abba, Rav Abba was sitting there in the among the Talmidim in front of Rav Ami. So then he brings a witness that actually he had pulled it from him. Now he's Mechuyav Shvua, Rav Menerech. So now he says, yes, the Eid Echad is telling you the truth. You should have asked. I would have told you the truth, too. I did pull it out of his hands. You know why? Because 2 minutes before that, he grabbed it out of my hands. So I was chatfei v'didi chatfei. I pulled it back. I can't help it if the witness only saw the last part. Amr Abami. Well, gosh, what is a poor judge supposed to do in a case like this? Echad v'dayni dini dayonei l'haydina. Should I tell the guy, well, you're going to have to pay? I mean, why should he have to pay for what he took? I don't have two witnesses. Two witnesses are necessary in order to be mechayev for a person to pay. That's how much mechaver l'varaya. I can't say that he's potter because I have one witness, and one witness is mechayev him to swear. I can't tell him to swear because namely zili shtaba. What's he going to swear? I mean, he would have to swear, as far as the shvua that he's chayev to take, is that he didn't grab it out of the other guy's hand, but he's telling us, I did grab it out of the other guy's hand. So what's he going to say? I swear that this aide is not telling you the truth. On the contrary, I support everything that this aide says, absolutely telling you the truth. Because, kiven yom ha-michtav chatve. Okay, so we're stuck. I mean, he himself is saying, yes, I did take it. So he can't swear that he isn't. I mean, he would be the same as if he were a Goslin who weren't able to take a shvua. So I don't know what to do. And here is where Rabbi Abba comes along and tells us exactly what it was that Rabotenu Shebe'eretz Yisrael would have said about this case. This is a guy who is mechuyev a shvua. He's mechuyev to be nishba against the Eid Echad. Can he take that shvua? No. Do I care why he cannot take that shvua? No. The bottom line is, he's a mechuyav shvua v'eino yachol li'shava. V'chol ha'mechuyav shvua v'eino yachol li'shava Mishalem. Oh, that's exactly what Rabotenu Sheberetz Yisrael said in the same case, because they say Chozra Shvua LeMekoma means put it back to the guy who was Bechuy of the Shvua, and since he's Eino Yochel Yishava, so now he's not going to be able to collect, right? Okay, so that's what Rabotenu Sheberetz Yisrael said. It reflects what Reb Abba said, and Omar Rava, and that's so reasonable. What Reb Abba said is so reasonable, because in the Braita we know that Reb Ami said a beautiful, beautiful diak in the pasuk. Shvuat Hashem tiyeh ben shneihem. I mean, what is ben shneihem supposed to mean? I mean, obviously it's ben shneihem. I mean, who else are we talking about? This v'nikrav ba'al bayit elokei. I mean, obviously these are the two people. There's the one who says it was lost, and the other guy who says you owe it to me. The point of ben shneihem is lovely. It means between the two of them, but not between their heirs. Lo ben ayorshim. So only where you're in a situation where you're actually talking to the original litigants, where they can make that shvua, but not in a case where you're talking about the yatomim and ayatomim. So tell me, what do you think the pasuk is talking about? Okay, when it says not between the yorshim, hechidami, is the case that somebody goes over to someone and says that my father gave your father $100 and you've got that $100. And the other one says he did get $100, but he had paid back the other, or he originally only took 50, never took that 100. So basically we have over here a case of moda b'miksas. Is that what the case that we're talking about? Because over here, both of them say they know for a fact what happened. Is this any different than a standard moda b'miksas? No. They have a direct claim. One guy is claiming, I know for a fact that your father owes my father money, and therefore you owe me money. And the other one says, I know for a fact that he only owes part of that money. Motive and excess. The fact that the original debt was incurred by the father, does that make a difference? Why you owe the money? If it was an investment in a savings plan from 50 years ago, so now it's no longer a chi of mammon, it's like anything else. That can't be the case. Mali hu, mali avua. It doesn't make any sense that there should be a difference in a case of a bori. Elalav, the case has got to be the type of situation that we have been talking about, where he says, look, I don't know for a fact what's what, but as far as I know, one of those situations, right? So Elolav, the Amalei Mona La'aba B'yadavicha, and he says, look, I know at one time that he had this money that he owed, and the other one says, I don't know. I mean, I do know that he did have for sure 50 he owed you, but I don't know anything about the other 50, right? So that's the case of Moda B'miksas. But over here, he's not able to take that shvua because it has to be between the original litigants. So now, if you're going to tell me that in such a case, if he had said himself, I don't know for sure, I know the 50, but I don't know the other 50. So in such a case, he would have been chayef to pay the whole thing. Why? Because he was a bechuy of shvua and he can't swear. What's he going to say? I swear I only owe you 50. You said you don't know for sure. How can you swear that you don't know? So if that would be the case, itzrichro lemiftaga b'yoshim. Why do I need a pasuk, right? And then in that case, rather, I need the pasuk. Because if you're going to tell me that the father himself would have been chayev, then I need to know that the Yorshim in that case are not chayef to pay, are not chayef to make a shvua, because that's exactly what the chiddush of the pasuk is. Even though your father in the same circumstances would have been unable to swear, you are also unable to swear, but you don't have to swear because the shvua Hashem tiyeh only ben shneihem, and now it's not ben shneihem, and therefore you don't have to pay the full 100 just because you don't know. But if you're going to tell me that the father wouldn't have been chayev in that case, meaning you disagree with Rabbi Abba, and you would say, well, if he can't swear in that case, so then he doesn't have to pay the whole thing. Let's let it be decided by God. So then That would be the other approach, not Rav Abba's approach. That would have been Rabotinu Shebebovel's approach. Then what do I need a pasuk for? Because if you're going to tell me that when they would be made of the mikzas, and then they would be chayev, they wouldn't have to make a shvua, their father would have, in that case, if he wouldn't have been able to take the shvua, then he would have had to pay. And therefore, I would have said they also have to pay. Kamashvil on the pasuk, that you don't have to pay. But if the father also would have been in the same situation, so then if it would have been Chozer l'Sinai, so then what do I need a pasuk for? I'm certainly not going to be more machmer on the children, am I? So therefore, you see that what Rav Abba said, that if you cannot take a shvua in the way that we just had, then you have to pay. Fine. So then that's exactly what Rabotenu Shel Eretz Yisrael said. But wait a minute. But that's a very good raya. How do Rav and Shmuel, how did they deal with the pasuk? It's just, it does say those extra words that are strikingly irrelevant. Shvuat Hashem tiyeh ben shneihem. Well, I mean, like, obviously. So don't they have to admit that it means and not between the yorshim? And don't they have to admit that that implies that in the same situation, the father would have had to pay? And since he can't make the shvuah, and it's only the yorshim who are now being parted from the shvuah because of a special pasuk? So that contradicts what they said. What do they do with that pasuk of Shvuas Hashem tiyeh ben shneihem? Ah, they, of course they recognize that pasuk. But they say that pasuk comes to tell me a different kiddush. Bibayle, likigitatanya. Shimon ben Tarfon Omer. Shvuat Hashem tiyeh ben shneihem. Remember, we had this drasha before when we were talking about the chumrah of shvuah. Tiyeh ben shneihem means both of them are going to get their head bashed. If this guy takes a shvuah b'sheker, the person who made this situation happen and who created a matzav where somebody was going to take a shvuah, he is also responsible for that shvuah b'sheker. He should never have made a deal without the proper aidim or whatever is necessary in place, or if there aren't any way to ensure it, then don't get involved with somebody like that in a deal. If you want to do a deal, then it's got to be with somebody that you are not going to ever come to make a shvua with. And that's what Shimon ben Tarfon said. You can't use a shvua as a backup to your business deals. Well, I'll make the deal even though I don't trust the guy, you know. At least we can put him in a position to make a shvua. That's not what you use the Shem Hashem for. And therefore, Bein Shneihem, between the two of them, they're going to get punished. Once we're already talking about a Shimon ben Tarfon drasha, we're going to tell you some of the other drashas of Shimon ben Tarfon, and that is another thing. Shimon ben Tarfon Omer, this was also in the Braita, which is why we're quoting it. So Shimon ben Tarfon Omer, Azara lo okev achar noef minay. Very fascinating. What is okev in English? How do we use that? Stalker. Right? It's interesting. You know, okev would mean somebody's walking in the footsteps of another person. Here we use it. That's actually a big machlokas between the Rimi Gash understands it, or between the way the Orach understands it. There are different approaches to okev. The beautiful approach of the Rimi Gash is that in the same way we say vaya ekev tishmaun, right? So what does ekev mean over there? Or ekev asher shama bekoli. The Ekev over there means all the way till the end, meaning finishing up even the kind of thing that people don't usually care about. That's the Ekev, right? Mitzvahs kalash adam dash ba'akevav. This is me, same thing over here. Any place that the last polishing of a deal or the last polishing of an issue would be taken care of, that's the Ekev. So here too, the one who does the Ekev for someone who's trying to get into bed with another guy's wife, he's a no-ev. So the pimp is the okev, because he makes the deal that makes it work. He allows it to work. So he's an okev. Fascinating, right? The Orach says the Pashtus, which is what you would have said. Okev means this guy is looking to make deals, you know. So he's following the people who, he suspects would be interested in a deal like this and presenting them with such a deal. but whatever. So someone who is okay, where do we see in the Torah? It's actually in the Luches. Lo tinaf can also be read as lo tanif. Lo tanif means don't cause someone to do adultery by making some kind of wife exchange deal with it. Another thing that Shimon ben Tarfon said, which we need to learn exactly today, because this is exactly where we are basically up to. Not this exact pasuk, but this exact issue. Because when Moshe Rabbeinu says over the Maisa HaMeraglim, he says something very strange. He says, Vateragnu ba'ohalechem. You were sitting there, and you were all complaining, and you said over Lashon Hara, slander, in your tents. But it wasn't in their tents. What do you mean, in your tents? In this week's parsha, it says, Beferish, that they spoke in front of Moshe and Yoshua, all of what, everything that they said in Kalev was in front of all of Adat Yisrael, in front of the Ohel Moed, and then the Shekhinah comes down in the, what do you mean, in Ohel Lechem? That makes no sense. Therefore, says Shimon ben Tarfon, what that means is, Vateragnu is actually an acronym. So it's a notricum. Tartem, you bums, first you spy, Viginitem, and then you say over bad things, Be'ohaloshomakom, right there in the Ohel of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, meaning, here too, the Rimigash says, what does it mean? In the Ohel Shomakom, about Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's living space. It's Ke'ilu, you spoke about his tent. And that was an incredible chutzpah, and that's the Teragnu Ba'ol Echem. That is beautiful, Pshad. It's mamash, a whole new way of looking at Eretz Yisrael. I mean, it's not really a whole new way, but it's like what the Ramban says about living in Eretz Yisrael is like living in the palace of the king. And that if somebody is chayte in Eretz Yisrael, so it's a much more chamur chet, because he's sitting there, ba'ol ha-shamakam, essentially. Another thing that Shimon ben Tarfon said, ad ha-nahar ha-gadol nahar Prat. So he was the one that said, it says in the pasuk, you know, from sea to sea. Eretz Yisrael, absolutely, from sea to sea. That's exactly what it's supposed to be. So Shimon ben Tarfon says, what do you mean the nahar ha-gadol? It's not as if the Euphrates River is like the world's greatest river, you know? So what's this? I mean, why not say till the Mississippi or till the Amazon? I mean, what's the Nahar HaGadol, Nahar Prat? Ah, that means Krav L'Gabi Dehina V'idhan. When you get yourself close to a person who is very chashiv and he's been covered with the oil, the anointing oil of chashivas, you get that oil on your skin, too. So Musk figures he'll hang out with Trump, you know, and he'll get well oiled. So then you can end up getting that kind of chashivas. And that's why it says it's an Nahar HaGadol. You want to flow past Eretz Yisrael. Ah, you get some of that chashivas attached to you. So just like Eretz Yisrael is Gadol, the Nahar Prat is Gadol. The very Rabbi Shmuel said the same thing with another saying, where they say, Eved Melech Kemelech. The idea over here is not the chashivas of being next to Eretz Yisrael. It's the fact that anything that is an Eved and serves a king has to be respected the same way that the king is respected. Otherwise, you are insulting the king if you insult the messenger of the king, as the Pippins and Mary were made very clear. You know, this is a messenger of the king. All right, so if that's the case, it's not the question of getting something rubbed off on you. It's the chashivas of serving the king. Moving on to the next piece of the Mishnah. Next piece of the Mishnah was the chenvani al pinkaso, and the Mishnah explained what that meant. So it doesn't mean that just because a makolet keeper has got his cash register in which every transaction was registered, was recorded by laser, and therefore he's believed. No, that's not what it means. It means the cases where a person calls up the storekeeper and he says, look, I'm sending down my son and please give him 5 bottles of milk, right? And then The son comes back and says, he never gave me the milk. And the storekeeper says, of course I gave him the milk. I don't know. He probably bought drugs with it. I don't know nothing about your son. So that's the case where we allow the chenveni to swear, or the case could be you called up the chenveni and you said, these are the two cases in the Mishnah. And you said, listen, my maid is going to be coming down. I don't have any cash to pay her. Would you please pay her? And he claims that he paid her. And the maid says she was never paid. So we say, basically in the Mishnah, that each of them can swear. And Banana said, you can't, how can you possibly have a situation where you can have the chenveni swearing and have you pay him, that he did pay that money, and then you can have the son or the person that he was supposed to pay, they can swear that they weren't paid. And, I mean, somebody is lying. So what, we're going to make a takana that we should have two people take a shvua, where between the two of them we're guaranteed to have a lie? We wouldn't have made a takana like that. Now, in a braita, we have what is apparently a different shita, not like either of those approaches, not like the Tamin Kama and not like Ben Nanas. Because in the braita, Rebbe said, well, Torah Shvua Zu Loma. Why are we going to have two people have to take a shvua? It's a lot of tircha. What exactly does that mean? I mean, maybe he's saying that Ben Nanas is right, or maybe he's saying, why should both of them have to take a shvua, where maybe the ones that we know that the worker definitely worked and he has a right to collect. That's for sure. Okay. So understand that he's allowed to swear. But why should we have the chenveni swear and collect? Let him prove that he actually gave it. We'll see why later on in the Gemara. So we don't know what he means. Amalei Reb Chiya to Reb Tanina, you yourself said in the Braita, Shnehem Nishbahim, Vinot Bimi Balabayit. Now, how are you coming along now and saying, why do we have a Shvua? Did you change your mind or what? The Rebbe didn't say anything. So the Gemara wants to know, well, I mean, did he not say anything because he basically realized he made a mistake? Keep Lamine. So he accepted what Reb Chiya said? Olo keep Lamine. Well, Tashma, there's a bright in which Rebbe Omer, the Poalim are Nishbahim. They swear to the Chenvani that they never got money. And then they collect from the Balabayit. Now look, if it was really that Rebbe had accepted what Reb Chiya said, why does it say he swears to Chenveni? It means he has to swear to the Balabayit. Because that's what the Mishnah said. The Mishnah said that they can swear and the Balabayit will have to pay them. Then the Chenveni can swear and he can collect from the Balabayit. Because the Mishnah was saying both of them are going to collect from the Balabayit. So what does it mean when it says Poalim Nishbaim Lechenveni? He obviously holds that the only ones that can be Nishbaim over here are the Poalim. And because of that, we say, look, you, Mr. Makolet, if you did something like that and you don't trust the people that you gave it to, why don't you have a deal? If you're stupid enough to give it to people that you don't trust, and you didn't take any kinds of advanced precautions, so why should we have you swear and take? You're an idiot. We don't protect idiots. Mashenkin, the workers, they aren't idiots. We know they worked. We know that they deserve to be paid. We know that they never accepted that they're going to believe what the Chenveni said. They have a very strong basis of being believed and being paid. So why wouldn't we allow them to swear? So what Rebbe seems to still be saying is, why do we have a Torah Shvua on the Chenveni? Omar Rava, no, it doesn't necessarily mean that. When it says they swear to the Chenveni, it may simply mean that they poalim anishboim lebalabayit b'ma'amad Chenveni. This is just a psychological issue. It means that the workers have to take a Shvua right there in front of the Chenveni, and they're going to be very embarrassed to lie right to his face and say, we never got paid. Guy never gave us any money. And that is only keecha delichsef lumine. we want to make sure that there's as much psychological pressure on them to say the truth. But it doesn't mean that the only interaction over here is the fact that poor storekeeper is going to be messed up and he's going to have to pay. And therefore, they should swear to him that they never got from him since he's going to lose the money. And that's not the point. Itman. Shtei Kitei Eidim. Now, we have a fascinating thing that relates very much to our Mishnah. And here we've got two different sets of witnesses. They say the opposite of each other. Whatever the testimony was, so-and-so is a murderer. The other guy says somebody else was the murderer. Or so-and-so borrowed this money and the other ate him. Say, no, that's not happened. The other one borrowed it from him. So they contradict each other. And that's not, of course, Eidim Zomim. Nobody said you were with us in a different place. They're simply contradicting each other as to the facts. Now, somebody is lying. Do they lose their cheskas kashrus? So, Amar Rav Huna, look, if either of those two pairs show up separately in the future on their own to a different question in court, we're not going to say, now, wait a minute. You guys were found to be contradicting another set of witnesses in case X, where X versus Y, right? That's not going to hold any water because the court's going to say, listen, they have a cheskas kashrus. They were never found to be lying. And therefore, you cannot extrapolate from the fact that there was a court case in which they were involved in contradictions with other testimony. We don't know that they were the liars. So they retain their cheskas kashrus and they're fully acceptable as witnesses in this other case. So that's no problem. Each one of them could come to a separate case. Zova abifnei atzmo meida, v'zova abifnei atzmo meida, and there's no problem. Whereas Rav Chisda says, what do you mean? V'hadis shakre lonali. Why are we able to bring in, if one of them is definitely shakir, so how can we make a chazaka that's a contradiction in terms? You're going to have one guy in courtroom number one, the other two in courtroom number two, they're both going to be giving testimony. It's ridiculous. We know that one of them is lying. How can we possibly be makshir two sets of Aiden who could come and be made in two separate cases and they would both be believed? It's outrageous if we know that they're Aiden Shikarin. So now, if that would be the case, let me point out to you that we could have four variations on a theme that would have to do with the signatures of these witnesses. Of course, their signatures are going to be exactly the same. I mean, if they have a cheskas kashrus, the signatures are kosher. If not, they're not. Now, it's easy to imagine situations where we've got these two sets of Eidim on two documents where it's going to be nogea, this machlokas Rav Huna Rav Chisda. So let me give you the four cases. Suppose you've got two different cases. You have two lenders, you have two borrowers, you have two separate shtarot about loans, and each one of those shtarot was signed by one of these sets, right? Okay, that is the machlokas. That's what we're talking about. Is each one of those presentable? Or, as Rav Chisda says, whoa, you can't present a shtar where the Eidim were involved in possible Eid Sheker. Okay, so that's the case. Now, let's take a look at the variations on the case. Suppose you have one lender, and you've got one borrower, but you've got two loans, and you've got two shtarot, also each one and a different shtar. So now, according to Rav Huna, who says that we accept it, this guy is going to have to collect from the same person with two contradictory sets of witnesses, one of which is a liar. Now, he can't collect both of those loans because we know, even Rav Huna would be maida, we know that one of these shtarot is definitely possible. Uh-oh. Not in the middle of Daf Yomi. Sorry. No, Fred would say, quiet. All right, we may have to interrupt in the next few moments, but Shmu says no, and it's fine. Excellent. I like that approach. So This, by the way, is a good opportunity to point out that these ideas of needing to go into a shelter in something that is not really dangerous on a personal level. In other words, the chances of being hurt in one of these things are ridiculous. It's more dangerous to take a bath or to cross a highway. But the point is that here you're dealing with the overall need for the country not to suffer casualties. Therefore, you can't afford to be killed because of the impact that it will make on the tzibor. So it's a completely different set of issues in which Dosh Bei Rabim is not the standard way in which to look at it. Obviously, most people will laugh at this thing. They'll go up to the roof to look at the fire show, right? Which people do all the time. But that is exactly what you're mechuyev not to do. People who make the cold calculations are people who don't care about the tzibor. And you'll notice that. It's exactly those people who are always the smart alecks that they have it all worked out. But they don't have that sense of responsibility. Okay, so over here we've got the two contracts. Now we've got it. This is not the same as coming into a court here and another court in Timbuktu. This is, we have to determine. We have two contracts. We have to determine what to do with two contracts. It doesn't matter now, because for sure one of them is possible. Okay, so if one of them is possible, then even Rav Huna is moda that you can only collect the lesser of the two contracts. Because since we don't know which one is pasul, between the two we know one is kosher, that would mean the lesser amount can be collected because that's included one way or the other, right? Okay. Now, let's take another case. We've got, well, let me just tell my wife to prepare to get.
Ima, I have to get ready. No, it's there.
Sorry. So how about in a case where you've got two lenders to one borrower? So we've got two different shtarot. Again, each one is signed by a different set over here, right? That's the case, basically, like the Mishnah. And in the Mishnah, we said that we can have, even though we know somebody's lying, we could have the chenveni and the sachir, who is supposed to be paid. They can both swear, they can both collect from the Baal HaBayit, even though one of them is definitely lying. So in this case, it seems to be exactly the same. Rav Huna, who says, as long as it's separate eidos, they're allowed to come into Beis Din, each of these two malvim, the two lenders, could present their shtar, even though one of them is definitely not good. The question would be, if you've got two borrowers and they took loans from one malvin and each one of them now has a shtar that was signed by an alternative kat, one of which is possible. So now the question is this the same case as the other case? I mean, if so, then if we would say, since over here, it would be coming together for the same person. So then the malva can't collect from either of them because he's got two different borrowers. In the same way that he couldn't have collected both contracts from one guy, he would have had to collect a lesser amount. In this case, he can't collect both of these contracts because one of them is definitely possible. So each one of the borrowers can say, yep, one of them is possible. Guess which one? Mine. I never borrowed any money. And you know damn well that these two guys are liars. Well, we don't know. Well, you know that one of them is liars. Obviously, it's the one that signed on my phony contract. But that's exactly what the other guy says. So in this case, you're collecting from two different people where each one can be deiche the other one. So according to Rav Huna, would he, and obviously according to Rav Chisda, I mean, it's ridiculous. They're both possible no matter what. But maybe we should say that since they're two different people, so they're similar to two different cases, and therefore each one of them is collectible. Teiku, that we don't know precisely.